Good evening, everyone. If you would turn your Bibles to Psalm 17. Psalm 17.
As we've been doing for the last long period of time, I don't even know how long we've been doing this, almost since I've been here. The second Sunday evening of each month, looking at one of the Psalms or a portion of the Psalms, we're going to continue with that this evening, looking at Psalm 17. Part of which was read earlier, the middle portion of that. But I want to look at the entire psalm tonight. And again, I hope as we go through this study, we're not thinking that we're just trying to fill up some time and say we've covered all the psalms. I hope we see in each of these psalms something that is applicable for us today. And I believe this one will be no different. And we talked about this morning the matter of being able to stand alone as Christians and how we are quite often in opposition to what the world would have us to do. I don't think it's strange to any disciple that the world doesn't see things as we do. The world has, of course, a worldly focus, and the people of God are supposed to have a spiritual focus that looks more to the next life than we do focus on this one. But it's not the here and now versus the hereafter views that causes all the conflict. The world really doesn't care when it comes down to it if we want to go to heaven or not. What causes the conflict between the two groups is the fact that those who do live for God also preach a message of holiness and righteousness and the need for men to repent of sin and follow after God. And some don't want to change, and they don't want to stop living a life that is focused on the worldly things and involves sin. And so when somebody comes along and points out that what they are doing is called sin by God, that, of course, automatically becomes a source of contention and sometimes just irritation. And some worldly ones, as a result of this contention and irritation, want to get rid of the ones who are causing this irritation and contention. And so they will go to great lengths to ensure that they can go on living however they want to live without anybody noting their sinfulness or a need to change or of a certain judgment. And as we know, there are some who didn't like the success of Jesus when he walked this earth. And he taught the people the true way that pleased God. And we find in John the 11th chapter, after they had heard that he had raised Lazarus from the dead, they were very bothered by that. We read in John the 11th chapter, verses 45 through 53, that they decided to get together when they heard the report of what Jesus had done. And they were troubled, and they said amongst themselves, "What are we going to do? If we leave him alone, the people will believe him, and the rulers will come and take away our position." And so they determined in verse 53, from that day forward, to find a way to get rid of him. So it's not anything new when we have some today who don't like godly people just simply living a godly life because it convicts them as they are living the worldly life. It shouldn't come as any surprise that those who were jealous of the successes of Paul and Barnabas tried to get rid of them, as we read in Acts the 13th chapter and also again in Acts 17 verse 5. So we shouldn't be totally surprised when we see resistance today against God and His ways and irritation among the worldly today in this country. And we shouldn't be surprised that in the not too distant future, they start violently responding to the message of the gospel and those who are teaching it. And that's the people of God, the disciples, Christians. Well, tonight I want us to consider a psalm where the writer speaks as one who was facing resistance and attacks from the worldly ones who have apparently set their eyes on him as their next victim. We'll call tonight's lesson "The Righteous Pray." If you notice in the passage it was read earlier that he described him in one way in verses 11 and 12. "They have surrounded us in our steps as a lion is eager to tear his prey, and like a young lion lurking in secret places." This is the picture that he gives to us as we read this psalm, and he is the prey. And what he is really saying, not just him, but anybody who is following after God, And in these words, we may see the thoughts of the one who is undergoing this persecution and hardship only for the fact that he is a righteous follower of God. But who is he? And who are his enemies? And what is it that he asks of God here in this psalm? Well, the answers to these questions, I think, may be relevant to us today or someday. So let's consider this psalm tonight. First of all, he begins with a plea to God for vindication. Vindication simply means to be proven right. And that's what he's asking of God. And he makes his plea to God, of course, as one who is a follower of God. And he asks simply to be heard of God. Notice in verse 1, he says, "Hear a just cause, O Lord. Attend to my cry. Give ear to my prayer, which is not from deceitful lips." Jump down to verse 6, "I have called upon you, for you will hear me, O God. Incline your ear to me and hear my speech." He simply begins with this plea to be heard by God, but he argues from the beginning that his cause is a just one. Because he is pleading with the one who is righteous in all that he does, that is God, and one who is said to love righteousness, as he would say in Psalm 33 and verse 5, he expects that he will get the attention of the Lord. And what is he asking for? Again, he's asking for vindication or justification. In verse 2, he says, "Let my vindication come from your presence. Let your eyes look on the things that are upright." Now, the psalmist in this psalm is not asking for revenge on those who are making his life miserable. He's not asking for special favors, but simply vindication. That is, he wants to be proven right in the sight of God and of men. And the one who is righteous in all that he does is the best source for being called right. If anybody is going to correctly call someone right, then it would be God. And so he goes to God with this plea that he might be vindicated and to show that without a shadow of a doubt, his enemy's attacks are unwarranted and unjustified. His words to the Lord again are, "Let my vindication come from your presence." In other words, knowing the Lord would be fair and just in his assessment of the situation. But he also pleads with the Lord for some stability. In verse 5, he says, "Uphold my steps in your paths, that my footsteps may not slip." What he seeks from the Lord here is stability in his life, that the assurance that he will not fall because of the efforts of his enemies. And as we're going to note soon here, he's going to note that he has walked faithfully with the Lord and is well known to the Lord. So the plea that his life of faithfulness might be ensured by the Lord's help. This is a plea of one who is faithful to the Lord, that he might remain faithful with the Lord's help. But he also pleads for the mercy of God in this. Notice in verse 7, "Show your marvelous loving kindness by your right hand." Now that word loving kindness is most often translated in the Bible as the word mercy. So he's simply saying, "Show your marvelous mercy by your right hand, O you who save those who trust in you from those who rise up against them." And he finds himself in that very situation. So he knows who he should go to for deliverance and for mercy. And he asks for mercy by his deliverance from the enemies, the very situation again in which he finds himself. And let it be understood here that the mercy of God that he's asking for is not forgiveness of a wrong, but a plea for compassion from the Lord that he might see his condition and desire to relieve him and give him comfort. And in this situation, he also pleads for the protection of the Lord. Notice in verses 8 and 9, he says, "Keep me as the apple of your eye. Hide me under the shadow of your wings from the wicked who oppress me, from my deadly enemies who surround me." So clearly intended in these words was his desire that the Lord's protection would be around him from his enemies. He wants to be always within the sight of the Lord. That's why he says, "as the apple of your eye." The apple of your eye is the iris. And he's simply saying, "I want to be in view of you all the time." He knew that was a place of safety. You ever see the Lord in that way? That as long as he is seeing you, you know you're safe. You're okay. Now, for those in the world, that's not the way they see the view of God, the sight of God. They would rather hide from God. We see that from the very beginning, back in the book of Genesis in chapter 3. What did Adam and Eve do when they sinned? Well, they tried to hide from God. What do we see men do today when they
hear about God
and the eternal punishment and the judgment, well, they would rather not hear about that. They want to hide their ears from it. They want to hide their minds from it, and they want to hide themselves from it. But we can't do that. But here, the righteous one knows that being within sight of God is a safe place. And so then he presents himself to the Lord and describes himself to the Lord so that we can see that he is, if you will, worthy of God's attention. Now, when it comes down to it, none of us is really worthy of God's attention, but yet we have been promised that God will care for his people and care for the faithful. And so we see him here as one who has been tested and tried by God. In verse 3, he says, "You have tested my heart. You have visited me in the night. You have tried me and have found nothing. I purpose that my mouth shall not transgress." Now, he's saying this not as one who comes to God as a last resort. That's quite different than what we often hear today in the world, where somebody finally goes to God in prayer and they do it only as a last resort because they've tried everything to make life better or to ease the troubles in their life, not ever trying God's ways. But when they realize they can't do it all, then they finally, as a last resort, "God, help me out of here." When they've never sought his ear before, they've never tried his ways, never desired his ways. That's not what we're seeing here. He's coming to God as one who is faithful, and as he is speaking to God, points out, "You've tested me, you've tried me, you know who I am." He had stood under this view of God, and not just God seeing him exist, but an inspection of him. Notice he said, "You have tried me and have found nothing." In other words, there's a testing, like a metals testing, to see whether it was worthwhile. This is not some wicked man who found himself in trouble and only at the last resort decided to go to the Lord. He's someone who, as he said, avoided the worldly ways. Verse 4, he goes on to say, "Concerning the works of men, by the word of your lips, I've kept away from the paths of the destroyer." In other words, "I've chosen your ways over the ways of God." He's purposefully chosen not to sin by his words, and is just as purposefully chosen not to follow the works of men because of the Lord's instruction. So he avoided the path of the destroyer, as he describes it there, who we know is our and his spiritual enemy. As he noted earlier in verse 3, this avoidance of the path of the destroyer was established by his desire, as he said in verse 3, to walk faithfully in the ways of God, the path of the Lord. Well, what about his enemies? This is the one who is coming to the Lord. What about the ones that he is describing here as coming against him? Well, not quite as pretty a picture here. He really described them as what I would call self-confident. They were not followers of God. They were not lovers of righteousness, but they were simply worldly, ungodly, and self-confident individuals. Well, what do they have confidence? Well, it was in their riches. They have closed up their fat hearts. With their mouths, they speak proudly. They were so indulgent in their riches and wealth that they found false comfort and assurance in those material things, to the point that they no longer reasoned with any common sense or justice. They no longer cared for others. They just wanted to enjoy life and all the wealth and abundance of that. And if they had to step on somebody else and take from them and oppress others to do it and persecute them as the righteous, then that's what they would do. But they were confident in these things rather than in God. They were proud. With their mouths, he said, they speak proudly. It looks like I've got some things out of order here. But they were proud. Whoever they were, apparently they didn't just come in arrogance because of their possessions, but arrogantly boasted of themselves and their abilities as if somehow they could overcome even God. And as is often the case with those who put their trust in the riches of this world, they would soon be disappointed and shown to be the foolish ones that they were. But as he goes on to describe, they set their eyes on the prey, the righteous ones. In verse 11, he described it in this way. They have surrounded us in our steps. They have set their eyes crouching down to the earth. Now, this is why he comes to God. He sees those who are in opposition to the righteous ones, including himself. And he knows that he's in trouble and he may not be able to do this in and of himself. And he sought help from the Lord because as he saw them, they have surrounded us in our steps. So it seemed that wherever they went, the righteous ones, they were surrounded by these evil men who sought their destruction. And it's in this situation the psalmist then makes the plea to God. And they were focused on attacking the righteous. They weren't just watching them to watch them. Verse 12, as a lion is eager to tear his prey. And again, I can't help but, you know, I'm old enough that I remember the old Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom. You know, for you folks today, it's Animal Planet. But back in my day, it was Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom with Marlon Perkins. And I just remember watching that show so many times where the camera would pan across the savannas and you'd see some cheetah or lion or something just crouching low just below the height of the grass there. So they would be hidden from the ones that they had their eye on, and the camera pans across there and there you see that animal that he's focused on. That's the picture we see right here. These people are focused on them. That lion's not just watching that antelope or whatever it may be just to bide the time. He's focused on him because he's going to attack and try to destroy and kill. That's what we're seeing here in this situation. They're not just merely harassing them and making trouble. They're set on attacking them with the intent to harm and or destroy. And to no one's surprise, these men were not mentioned as plundering or attacking their own, but the righteous. They sought the destruction of the righteous. Why is that? Simply because they were the righteous. They have no problem with other wicked men because other wicked men don't make them feel uncomfortable. Other wicked men don't tell them that what they're doing is sin. Other wicked men don't tell them, hey, you might not want to do that. But the righteous will. It's the righteous who are their prey. And so what does he come to the Lord asking for? Well, his desire for them, notice in verse 13, arise, O Lord, confront him, cast him down, deliver my life from the wicked with your sword. So first of all, he asked the Lord to confront him and cast him down. He didn't want the Lord to simply give him temporary comfort and relief, but wanted the source of trouble to be permanently removed. Have you ever heard the story, maybe you heard this illustration before, about the congregation that had this spider web that every Sunday morning when somebody came in to open up the building, there'd be this spider web up in the corner. And so whoever got there first would always go to the broom closet, go get a broom, and knock down the cobweb. And after several months of this, somebody finally stopped the man who was sweeping the cobwebs and said, why don't you kill the spider? That's what the psalmist is asking here. Not to just wipe away the cobweb. Don't just take care of the trouble temporarily. Take care of the ones who are causing the trouble. Kill the spider. What he's asking for here is deliverance. Verses 13 and 14 again, deliver my life from the wicked with your sword.
With your hand from men, O Lord, from the men of the world who have their portion in this life, whose belly you fill with your hidden treasure.
They are satisfied with children, leave the rest of their possession for their babes. As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness. So in really no uncertain terms here, the psalmist asked the Lord to deliver him from the hand of the wicked, who had lived for and enjoyed all the material pleasures, to leave whatever they have to their heirs, implying that, are you reading the implication there? He's wanting them to not be living any longer. From men, notice again, let's read that again. Maybe we missed that in the reading. with your hand for men, O Lord, for men of the world who have their portion in this life, whose belly you fill with hidden treasure. They're satisfied with children and leave the rest of their possession for their babes. Those who live for this life and build up these possessions, but he's essentially saying, give them heirs who will soon inherit. He's asking the Lord to take them away from this world, to suffer the death penalty for their actions. Now, we have to believe that when the psalmist, as a righteous man, is asking this, is not asking this simply for vengeance on someone who is not worthy of these things. He concludes by stating his ultimate desire there in verse 15. As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness. This is a contrast to those who live for the material things in the here and now. His pleasure would be to wake with the Lord in eternity. And in the end, he again states his basis for the plea as his life and his heart as a man set on pleasing the Lord and doing his will while refraining from the material pursuits. He distances himself in desire from those who sought his destruction. Now, as we look at this psalm, we might say, well, I've not been in that situation, or I'm not in that situation right now where things are that bad. But when things do turn worse, and when we are in a difficult position, and we are persecuted by those around us who would rather us not be around to tell them the difference between right and wrong, what will we do and to whom will we go? Are we in the same position as this man who wrote this? Maybe not as difficult, maybe not as severe. But let's remember that when we are the prey of the wicked of this earth, that we need to also go to the Lord and not forget, as we talked about several times today, the promise of the Lord, Hebrews 13, verse 5, that He will never leave us nor forsake us. And so in those times of difficulty, whatever they may be, if it comes because we are serving the Lord, go to Him for deliverance. Go to Him for mercy and compassion and for relief. We have that promise, and we need to take Him up on that promise and believe it to be true. Now, this lesson is not one that would teach you what to do to become a child of God. But if you have heard the gospel message and you've come to believe what it teaches to be true, that Jesus is the Christ and Son of God, He came to this earth, lived as a man, faced all the temptations that we face, yet without sin, that He, at the end of His life, died on that cruel cross for our sins as the price that had to be paid. If you believe that to be true, the next question is, have you acted on that belief? Jesus Himself, when He sent the apostles out into the world, said, "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved." Have you done that? If not, our plea to you this evening is that you do that you might be saved, that you might be forgiven, that you might have the hope of eternal life in heaven, that you can go to God in prayer like the psalmist did as we read tonight, and know that when we fail and when we face persecutions and trials, we can always go to God for deliverance and for relief and for forgiveness if that's what we need. Maybe you're here tonight as one who is a Christian, but you've not been walking faithfully with the Lord. Maybe you're here tonight and you realize you have sin in your life, that you need God's forgiveness. Don't make excuses for it. Don't put it off. You know what you need to do. Take care of that tonight while we have this opportunity. And if you're here tonight, you just need the prayers of this congregation for help in some way. Whatever your need, will you come as we stand and sing?